they have scheduled a hearing on the University of Alaska's budget request. Before us this morning is Mr. Jay Barton, President of the University of Alaska.
Thank you, Senator. I'm pleased to be with you. I'll make a very brief opening presentation and then try to be prepared to answer all of your questions. First, I'd like to assure you that I am pleased to be with you, although you have a reputation for shredding presidents. I'm hopeful that I'll survive this particular session. I'm pleased with the job. I like Alaska, and I like the University of Alaska. And it's easy for me to defend its plan, and easy for me to defend its role in the state. It's a first-rate university, and I think underneath the debris and the problems of the past few years, there really is an interesting, solid, contributory institution. I just learned that many of its renowned research institutes that are functioning almost 90% on factors that deal with the Arctic and with Alaska, with the environment, have been recognized again in Washington as truly outstanding. We now rank second in the nation in federally supported environmental research, and that's all Alaska environmental research. That's the Geophysical Institute. That's a whole set of problems that range from telecommunications in the atmosphere to problems in the ecosystem. We rank 16th in the nation in overall federal confidence in our research program, as evidenced by their federal funding. I think that's a remarkable record to show, and one that gives you positive confidence, I think, that the university really is a first-rate institution. I'd like to spend time talking to you about some of the educational side as well as the research side, such as the cross-cultural program, in particular, the Marine Advisory Service, a whole set of things that I believe touch the lives of most of our citizens. But let me give you just a statistic. This last spring, almost 28,000 people registered for a course somewhere in the University of Alaska. That's about 6.5% of the population of the state. A major piece, a significant piece, not a major piece, a significant piece of the population. It means that we really are reaching people, that there really is a demand for our services. We granted some 1,200 degrees last spring. We contributed significantly to the future of Alaska in the lives of these young men and women who have graduated with certificates and degrees across the state. What I've sought to do in my short 6 months here is to reawaken in the faculties, the staff, and the students, and in the citizens of the state, the idea that this is a university at the service of the state. It's a land-grant institution. The plan that you have before you today, in our plan for Fiscal 81, represents the first efforts to point the institution in new directions, to give it a focus that really will make it responsive to the needs of the people. With the help of the Board of Regents, we've established priorities or directions for planning that will help us focus on what are the most important needs of the state. We've worked very hard to propose new programs and new effort in rural and native education. We've worked hard at proposing new programs in the development of renewable resources and alternative energy sources, and naturally to continue support on the non-renewable resource level. I am very much interested in the renewable resource question. That has a tremendous potential for the future stability of Alaska and represents a university role that I think the university can handle with great competence and skill. We've tried to be responsive to the needs of enrollment pressures, management problems, our financial responsibilities. We're seeking a new pattern of operational flexibility so that we can handle and manage for you more successfully the funds that you allocate to us. We're looking for new funds for some vocational training programs, because this too is a direction that many of our young people must head in. A recent report of the Carnegie Commission that was just released last week entitled The New Opportunities for Youth, talks directly to that question, that there are many, many areas of work in the world today in which young men and women need to be prepared not necessarily by a full-fledged college education, but by a strong, vocationally oriented, good career training program. We also, of course, hope to continue to upgrade our university programs in athletics for both men and women. Now, in presenting this plan this year, we've tried to not only to set priorities and give it a sense of direction, but we've also tried to balance off some of the conflicting pressures. It isn't literally a plan that has given every increment, every unit in the state, the same amount. We've literally tried to say some things are more important than others. And we've tried to base that on the planning data and the planning system that we now have developing. You have asked over the years for visible evidence of a good sense of direction of the university. You've asked for master plans. We are putting in place a planning system rather than a master plan. You have received, I think, the first piece of that, which we call the mission statement. That mission statement represents an overall intention of the direction of the university. It's step one, not an ultimate plan, it's just step one. Step two will be to develop a series of planning tools, one of which is a record of where we've been. We need good historical data. You need it. You've asked for it many times, and we're beginning to come up with good hard data for the first time in many years. We have a new director of institutional research that is, I think, able to conduct internal audits and devise collection procedures and test procedures that give us confidence in the data we now present to you. We need, furthermore, a good set of agreed upon assumptions as to how we perceive the future. And by that I mean your perceptions as well as mine, the faculty's and students and staff's perception also, so that we really do have an agreement as to what the future looks like. We call this our planning set of planning assumptions. And finally, we need a definitive statement of program goals and objectives by each particular department or program area of the institution, so that this too is agreed upon and reviewed. To put it all together, we need a management system in which planning is an integral part of the management task. Not a blue ribbon committee that meets at LES and devises a plan for the future, but one that actually is operational in the system, so that day by day we plan, and month by month the plans go forward. Each year our operating plan drops out for your review. At the same time, we're moving forward with the long-term plans as established by our planning assumptions. I've established a new management structure to achieve this. There is now a budget and policy council composed of faculty and staff representatives, student representatives, but composed not just of central administration vice presidents, but also of the four chancellors of the system, so that each of the chancellors of the competing units or separate units of the institution have an opportunity to participate in decision making for the entire University of Alaska. I think we're going to see some good decision making, and I think we're going to end up with a deep understanding throughout the system of how and why decisions are made. I'm pleased with the direction that planning is heading. Dean Bill Phillips of the University of Alaska Fairbanks College of Management is heading it up for me on a six-month leave from his job as dean. We propose that the plan that we presented this year is reasonable and realistic. And I've used those words in speeches around the state. I think they make some sense, and let me take just a moment on it. We've developed a plan that asks for something considerably more than our initial budget guidelines, about a 19% increase in operating funds. Considering the difficulties of the last few years, in which a total of about 8% over the last 2 years was allocated to higher education, an increase in higher education, a 19% increase this year is not at all out of reason. Over the past few years across the United States, most states have kept up with inflation. We're one of the, in fact, we are the lowest state. We're the state that has not, in any degree at all, managed to keep up with inflation in its funding of higher education. So I think the 19% request is not an unreasonable request to you. I think it's also realistic, given the tasks that remain to be done in the state. This is not an unreasonable, this is a realistic amount of money to tackle that task. I'd be pleased to defend the details and the, as well as the principles, and I'll stand for any questions you have, Senator.
Fine. Thank you, sir. Do we have questions of the President? Mr. Bennett?
Thank you, sir. Doctor, I was wondering, you haven't had a chance to receive my letter yet, but I don't see any, or haven't seen any thus far, particular direction or desire or expansion of petroleum engineering or petroleum technology. I'm genuinely concerned with our state's wealth, its future, and it's all pretty much predicated on the petroleum industry. And yet within the academic sector, I don't see any dynamic movement toward training our citizens to where they can become leaders in the field. Everyone always says, well, Baylor already has it, or Oklahoma has it. Well, that's true, but I think as long as their alumni are in control, our people, for the most part, really don't stand a chance, unless they're degreed and credentialed, to get the top management positions. And I think their heritage has a right to it.
I do understand your question, and let me tell you of three developments that I think will be a direct response. First, I've asked Chancellor Cutler to do some very careful planning on petroleum engineering, and Chancellor Harrison in Anchorage as well. The Kenai Peninsula Community College has a good, in fact, one of the best petroleum technology programs I've seen, up and running and fully integrated with the petroleum industry. Third, there's a modest petroleum technology program at Tanana Valley Community College that needs a great deal of attention for the future. I can be only honest and tell you that we're giving it that attention, but it's going to take a little time to develop. Now, the issue in petroleum engineering that I see is that manpower is scarce. It's hard to find good petroleum engineers that are interested in teaching. We're looking for them. Dean Weisslein has found two, and I have some confidence that these are going to be people that will contribute to the development of our overall program. We need to be sure, if we put a baccalaureate degree program in place, that we really have the talent to support that. If we put a master's level program in place, that may be a little easier to support. That depends much more on high technology than anything else, and I think we can handle that. That's the level of academic discussion that's now going on. We'll try to have some plans for you very soon in response to your letter.
Thank you.
Senator Curtillo.
Just a couple of quick ones. It's been my observation for years that we felt we were throwing an awful lot of money, just throwing it into a pot for education. And when you say that you have 19% increase request and that we haven't kept up with inflation, we start, however, some years ago, way ahead of others in per person, per unit of effort, and so on per student, or I know that there are some arguments to that type of statistic, but often more. If we started at $10,000 a student operational, I'm not talking about bricks and mortar, maybe we shouldn't have gone up as fast as others, and that statistic I'd question a little bit.
Yeah, let me speak to that, because I do know precisely what you mean, Senator. Over the last 10 years, the University of Alaska funding has gone up fivefold, 500%. That's a tremendous jump for 5 years. And that's well in advance of what the institutions in the lower 48 have done in the last decade. The last 2 years, as the institution ran into all of its hard times, have seen very limited funding and a lack of confidence a lack of confidence on your part in the university's ability to handle its own income, I suppose, as much as anything. That's what I meant by not keeping up with inflation over the last few years. There is a base that's built, and I think it represents a major commitment that you've made as far as fold increase over 10 years. Started from a relatively modest base 10 years ago. That represents a tremendous commitment to make education available in Alaska. I like the idea of having the university centers, of having 12 community colleges, of having all these rural education centers. I like that outreach concept, because if the university weren't present in many of these outlying locations, the alternative would be no education. In a state with difficulty in communication and difficulty in transportation, there is a high delivery cost. Now, we've tried to make some reasonably accurate and consistent reproducible studies of costs, and it's hard because our cost accounting system, our historical system, is not adequate. But in order to do something that we can compare with the lower 48, we have taken the direct cost of instruction as itemized in last year's operating budget for academic instruction, and divided that by the student load, and come out with instructional costs, direct instructional costs, that are not significantly greater. They're the same order of magnitude as those anywhere in the 50 states. If, however, we add to that the delivery costs of providing instruction in Nome and in Bethel and in Galena and in all of the places that we provide instruction, the delivery costs are high.
What about Fairbanks itself? Say Anchorage, Fairbanks.
Yeah, the actual direct instructional costs in Anchorage and Fairbanks are among the lowest because they take advantage of the economy of scale. Now,
does it compete then, you're saying?
Oh yeah, the actual direct costs compete. And don't forget, the university does a lot other than teach. This tremendous research effort is one. The service effort, from the Marine Advisory Services to the Cooperative Extension Service to the Agricultural Service, adds on top of that. So it's more than just instruction.
I have a couple more quick questions. And I know as the new man on the block, I've got four people over the years who've asked these questions. Do students really make a meaningful contribution to your new policy council? Have you really integrated them? Have you brought on some method of bringing in people that are mature enough to contribute?
I met with Rob Morant just last night and asked him that question. How do we get the right students in? Our system right now is to ask our student region to make the appointment, and that drops the burden down on somebody else. We do need a way of involving students much more effectively. I don't have a good answer yet.
Do your teachers, your senior staff, your upper division teachers, if they get more than stateside and some reasonable figure for cost of living, are you higher paying your professors at a given level than the average, say, West Coast University state land grant college?
The data that I've looked at indicate that our average faculty salaries are higher than average faculty salaries, say, in the West Coast states, by a little bit, by approximately the cost of living factor between Alaska and the lower 48.
What about the question of double dipping of professors, where they work for you, but they also have a very good sinecure elsewhere? That's one that's come up several times.
Is there less of that? Well, I don't know the extent, because we don't have good reporting systems. We have asked for a new policy development on consulting that will put limits and put some reporting steps in so that deans and directors and chancellors have some measure of how much time is actually being spent.
We hear that you're administratively, and these are questions I know other staff will answer too, but we hear that you're administratively, you've got too much administration and too much money into administration, too much inefficiency, in compared to your good senior level professors and so on. That in fact, you steal from them some to add to this administrative burden. I don't mean you personally, as you know. It's been a complaint of every finance committee that I know of, and it's been admitted to from time to time by at least some of your senior staff. I've talked to them personally about that.
The impression I have is that the actual administrative overhead of the university is not bad. I feel overworked, to tell you the truth. On the other hand, the amount of money that is in the line item, stateside administration and Board of Regents, is very high. but that contains a great many items that really ought to be distributed across the units and some general operating costs rather than administration. For instance, computer services are in that. And
one final question is, I know I'm just repeating questions that these gentlemen in the past, and what about the integrated university system? I understand that you are working to where credits transfer between divisions. You're certain at least that the curve, the average between those curves of each university and each community college provides for enough education that those credits are transferable between the systems. I've seen some work and effort on that, so that a youngster going to a community college works hard and gets his credits can transfer over to what's going on there? One integrated university system.
The board
has one board of regents, you're one president.
The board has passed as a university policy that every student has a right to transfer credits from any element of the state institution to any other element of the state institution. It's an unequivocal statement. We will have some policy regulations that go with that that define how they will apply to degree programs, but it's a good clear-cut statement. The question you ask about a single university has a rhetorical tone to it, Senator, that I like the idea of a single university. I think the University of Alaska is what we're talking about. And I don't want that to be interpreted as meaning that I want all the power in the center. But I do want to see that the University of Alaska Fairbanks, the University of Alaska Anchorage, the University of Alaska in Juneau, and the community colleges see themselves as a piece of this overall.
We're only 400,000 students.
Right.
That's
right.
That's point.
Right. Yeah. And without subtracting from the independence and the responsibility of each chancellor, we do want them to see this as a single institution.
One further abuse, Mr. Chairman, is it seems to me that winter sports in Fairbanks might be different than winter sports in Anchorage, and we ought to put a greater concentration into winter sports efforts, facilities, and so on. You know, we have 50 below in Fairbanks, indoor winter sports. That's where I went to school, so I know something about it. And in Anchorage, you have a much warmer area at that particular time of year, and I think winter sports ought to be more emphasized. I'd be delighted to see them emphasized both places, but I mean outdoor winter sports, you ought to have more facilities.
One of my hopes, and this touches on something that I've spoken to many of you about, is that we can differentiate the campuses so that the University of Alaska Fairbanks and the University of Alaska Anchorage don't have to have the same thing. They can be different.
Ski jumps are at the University of Alaska Methodist University, the Bear one, for instance, and all kids of your school use them. And we need some winter facilities that are much less costly than the normal indoor basketball courts and so on.
And not just in sports, but in many things. We ought to differentiate the campus.
Thank you. Excuse me, and thank you very much for your tolerance.
That's okay. As the new kid on the block, we want you to feel very comfortable on the committee.
That's my point. I'll get you out later.
Representative Rogers?
Well, as the newer kid on the block, I have a couple questions about the differentiation between the Fairbanks and Anchorage campuses in particular. And reading from the University of Alaska mission policy statement, it's responsibility of the university in Fairbanks to provide a broad range of baccalaureate and graduate degree programs. In Anchorage, the development and maintenance of truly excellent baccalaureate degree programs. Could you explain the difference between the broad range of programs and excellent programs? And secondly, I see that engineering is mentioned only in Anchorage. Could you explain that?
I think the Fairbanks statement probably had the least work because there was the least friction about what its mission was. And it is a very general statement. The statement on the University of Alaska Anchorage had a good deal more work because there are some tensions as to what its mission is. And our intent in writing and adopting this particular mission statement was to define the University of Alaska Anchorage and differentiate it from the more general and older, more mature campus at Fairbanks. We intend that the baccalaureate program at Fairbanks continue, and that the fact that it isn't mentioned is not of significance in terms of its continuation. The development of engineering at the University of Alaska Anchorage, I think, needs to depend on what is academically the best way to go. Where can we get the best quality? What are the programs that make the most sense? Where is the need? And I've asked engineer from the University of Washington, Professor Dow, to visit us and talk with people at Anchorage, at Fairbanks, throughout the state, and to give us some counsel on the development of these programs. If you wish and have time, I'd be pleased to speculate as to directions, but that perhaps this is not the appropriate time.
I was going to ask, but maybe you do elaborate a little bit. I think it's interesting to folks.
There is, as Senator Fatula pointed out, a small population in Alaska. And whether we should, in serving that population, attempt to duplicate every high-cost program in order to meet centers of population, I think is open to serious question. I'd like very much to duplicate in our university centers those programs that are necessary to provide the basic of arts and science, liberal arts education, and in each component. And those are also the disciplines that are needed as backgrounds for any of the professional schools. Further, I'd like to see each of the university centers develop professional programs, advanced programs that make sense for the communities in which they're situated. Whether we should, as a matter of convenience or policy, duplicate high-cost programs such as engineering, literally, I hesitate. I'd rather see them complement each other rather than compete with each other. My experience has been with an engineering college of over 100 faculty and several thousand students. To talk about engineering colleges of a few faculty and scores of students is a totally different order of magnitude, and I need some time to adjust to that. One of the speculations, for example, that developing engineering in Anchorage should stress continuing education. We have a very highly educated population in Anchorage. Lots and lots of people there with advanced degrees, lots of engineers who need continuing education in these areas. Clearly, this is one of the most important steps that our engineering programs could do there. But that has to develop. Now, whether we go into baccalaureate is going to depend a lot on what our academic experts tell us.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I presume he's a member of all the committees. Senator Hackey?
Yes, Dr. Barton, in looking through your mission statement, I'm struck by the comment also that University of Alaska Anchorage will have the university's only school of nursing. And I've been receiving quite a number of letters from the nurses in the Fairbanks area who feel that it's really kind of an imposition on their time to have to go to Anchorage to get the upgrading in their expertise that's needed and required, as a matter of fact, in the nursing profession. And I wonder if that's something where the door is closed to anything taking place on the Fairbanks campus, or if there's something in the planning stages there.
Yes, indeed, Senator, and I'm glad you mentioned that, because that's an illustration of how I think we can serve needs without necessarily replicating schools and units. Vice President Trombley has been working with the nursing people in Fairbanks and in Anchorage to develop a satellite nursing program that will upgrade the talents and skills of working nurses in the area. And I think that's well along. We have some funds requested for it, and I think we have a good chance of getting it off the ground this year.
I know some of these, quite a number of these letters are a very recent date, and wondering if you could perhaps ask Mr. Trombley to get together with those of the Interior delegation to discuss this matter.
Senator Petula.
Thank you very much, Mr. President, Chairman. I noticed, and I may be wrong, but very little strength in the approach to your Sea Grant, your ocean facilities for your extension. And I know years ago it was a predecessor that stated that we can simulate everything on the ocean in big tanks in Fairbanks. And there's still a slowness. Second largest economic contributor and the largest labor contributor to the state is the fisheries. And there's a terrible concern today, and you have one or two of your academicians working on it, Doyle, one of them. There's a terrible concern today for quality control, for marketing, the Bristol Bay thing of maybe 85 million salmon out there, and perhaps beyond anything else outside of the mineral industry, the fisheries thing seems to be where we have a terrible failing. And what do you think is our mission now with your new assumption of presidency?
I just read Mr. Dole's report to a legislative committee on quality control. I thought it was a well thought out report. I like that.
He did that for my committee.
Good. Well, the directions he took I thought were good. We'd like very much to be preeminent in fisheries. There's a beginning in here, but the real beginning is going to have to be in our planning and in our development stages more than just in funding. We are on the verge of being appointed a Sea Grant college. We've been through the program stages. Our application is in for the final step, and I think we have a good chance of getting that final designation. Our Sea Grant Marine Advisory Service is already situated all along the Gulf, in Cordova, and in Juneau, and in the Kodiak.
Seward,
right. The University of Alaska Juneau has long been expected to take a strong role in the development of fisheries, given its location. It has recently employed two new faculty members, whose curriculum vitae I'm going to take back with me, because we really need to see the fisheries program as a university-wide program, not just on one campus, and certainly not just in Fairbanks, but throughout the state. The recent gift of the National Science Foundation in giving us a new 135-foot research vessel will help us very much in the total research effort we can support in the fisheries area. This is the Institute of Marine Sciences, and the ship is based at Seward. Will be used in the Bering Sea and throughout the Gulf. This is the Alpha Helix, and this is, again, a first-rate indication of how much confidence the federal government has in our fisheries and oceanography effort. The Regents and I have done a lot of talking about how we can progress in fisheries, and I've talked a great deal with Howard Cutler and with other chancellors and with faculty members. On the research side, we clearly need to pool our talents in both oceanography and fisheries because they hang together. There are speculations today that the more we know about the whole ocean environment, the more we're going to be able to handle fisheries. And some exciting things that maybe we'll learn how to attract fish, and rather than just hunt them, maybe we can farm them a little more successfully, which are intriguing speculations, and take some very interesting research as well as the practical kinds.
You need the extension of that knowledge where possible, because I talked to a man who spent 17 years. He knows the problem.
Mm-hmm.
But after 17 years, you got to go wild. And nothing has ever come really much in the extension of that information out into the fishery.
We need the whole transfer mechanism to get it into the fishery, I agree.
That's where academia seems to fail. Can't transmit.
That's where the Marine Advisory Service does a fairly decent job. Now, there aren't enough of them. That's what I'd like to see more of, more people that are actually down talking to the fisher people. We also need some work in food processing and canneries. That's another big element in quality control. There's some progress in it, right? I think a program like this, given the interest in this state, has to be integrated with what the governor's office is doing, what the Department of Fish and Game is doing, what the industry is doing. It's a reasonably complicated development. I want to do it right when we do it.
Well, we're all going to be failures in Bristol Bay this year. That's the tragedy. And we're all going to, and justifiably, be blamed. We all fail. That's a pretty good guess. Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, sir. Other questions of the president? Senator Bennett? It's committee pleasure at this point.
I have an incidental from the Anchorage campus. Thank you very, very much. There was quite a hullabaloo about importation of athletes to the far north, and I think making a happy academic situation is one thing, having a quarterback club is another thing, but I hope that our real policy is to do everything possible for our own student athletes that are generated within the state. It's just the Anchorage campus. There was quite a turmoil a while back on that subject. A great deal of turmoil.
Okay. Senator Cardullo,
thank you.
Representative Meek.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about there, Senator. I agree with you. I think one of the things we did last year to take a long step forward in utilizing our own athletes was putting the money in for the ski team. And the other thing, the opposite situation is going on with the skiers. We got the best skiers in the country. They're competitive in international, and they're going to Middlebury, Vermont, all over the country. We had them here. I think they'd rather stay if we had a good program with a good coach, and that's what we're working on. We just really put some money in last year. I think we should even improve upon that this year to try to make the ski program and perhaps the hockey program. I don't know what else what kind of athletes we have. But we have basketball players too, but I mean, we're not going to be as competitive in basketball as we're going to be in skiing, hockey, and some of the other sports.
Ski jumping and all those
ski
things.
Ski jumping, for instance.
Well, I'd like to ask Senator Cardullo, what was the problem as you saw it with the athletes?
What happened was the students that contacted me at the time felt that they didn't have proper use of the court facilities, not enough of the funding, both male and female students, and that quite a bit of effort and money somehow or other went into the importation of athletes for basketball. Again, his solution is partially, I think, the one that is we just provide the best possible facilities for winter sports, and our own Alaskans who grow up in winter conditions will be able to compete very well. And that's a statement of even Olympic trainers that we've talked to.
How many Olympians do we have this year?
Five.
And that's without trying.
But you don't have any ski or jumps. You don't have any outdoor winter sports facilities.
Senator Sumner.
I don't think that enough attention and energetic support has been given to the sports category and sports facilities and sports in general. I will limit myself to speak primarily for the Anchorage area. And I'd be far more excited to see some exportation than I am concerned about the importation of some of the athletes. I'm looking at an export program.
Especially as coaches later after they had a chance to learn the trade.
I'm tremendously interested. I think we have put in some funding to give Alaska something to be proud of, and I don't think we've had our money's worth. I don't think it's been at the level of the coaches and that sort of thing. I think we've had some really energetic effort at that level, but I just don't think the attitude's been right from the top. That's my assessment, my personal assessment.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Cardullo.
We had so little confidence even up to a year ago in the university's program. It wasn't the happiness or the attempt, but that we started putting money elsewhere in the scheme, and I think it should go to the university if they'll be willing to come up with the facilities development plan for a winter scheme. And I think it's a big thing. It ties into winter tourism. Real big in the Anchorage area, we have empty hotels, and we're Olympic style and Olympic caliber people, trainers, and it'd come up and say you'd have North American, you'd have International Junior, you'd have all those participants. It creates an economic thing as well. It's just a facility for the students. The combination is a happy one.
Representative Meek.
I'm real excited about and happy with what's happening with the basketball tournament. I think that's something very productive for the state. People going to it are really enjoying it, but if we can do that with basketball, well, we're just completely non-competitive. We can have the best teams in the world, the nation, come up here to play basketball. And with the limited facilities that we have right now, I just think what we could do with skiing, where we have some of the best skiers, and speed skating, and maybe some of the other sports.
I could bum rap the Regents all day long. I think the best thing they've done is hire President Barton so far. I can tell, of course, we've had soothsayers before. And they just have not shown good leadership over the many, many years in all these things. It's come out of the legislature, whether it was community college or whether it was this situation, and they ought to get with it or quit.
President Barton.
Senator, one of the things that we've talked about at some length with our chancellors is the way in which we can develop youth sports, not just college competitive varsity programs, but develop sports in Fairbanks and hockey teams and in the villages, so that we involve the youth of Alaska partly as a development program. You know, every good coach wants to do this anyway, because this is where his talent comes from, or her talent comes from, his or her, we have to remember that. But it may also have a very good impact, I think, on the youth in villages. I watched a track team out in Galena, and I very much enjoyed that experience. It was an interesting group.
Senator Hackney?
Well, Mr. President, if we're, Mr. Chairman, if we're really serious about this, why, I think the next step would be to put our money where our mouth is, because...
We can do it right now.
Maybe the Anchorage campus has been hollering about the lack of facilities down there, but I get the same thing from the campus in Fairbanks, insufficient support for the sports program up there. And again, if we're really serious about it, then let's put some bucks in it. They
just
can't do it.
Proposal.
They don't.
Well, we've got the hills in Fairbanks, too.
Oh, yeah.
Senator Summers, Jeff.
I think we made a giant step last year in terms of the amount of money we put into that category out of the conference committee particularly. I'd be enthusiastic to see additional monies put in there, assuming the attitude changes. I don't think on the basis of attitude that it's bought what we should have, what we were entitled to and what we could have purchased with that the amount of money. I think we need the right positive, aggressive attitude from the very top, and if so, I don't think I think there will be support. I think there'll be support for money and for, I think there'll be community support. But I want a buck and a half for the buck bang out of these sports dollars.
Representative Meekins and Representative Rogers.
Thank you. Another, while we're talking about incidentals, and I want to emphasize the way that Senator Petula pointed that out in terms of we are enthusiastic about sports, but it is incidental to the academic plan. And I think if you were making major mistakes in your academic plan here, you'd have, you know, the wrath of the whole state on you. So where we step in is where we see a failing on the part of the regents or the university system. And I think in terms of lack of promotion of the skiing, that's where there's, as the senators point out, that's one of the elements in the rest of the sports programs. That's why we're emphasizing. And I'm sensitive to that point because people criticize, say that we're only interested in sports and we're not interested in the academics, but I think you understand that's not the case. We're trying to fill in where we see the gaps. Another incidental area that isn't sports that I'm interested in quite a bit, I'm trying to put together, I'm kind of a Johnny come lately on the issue, but I'm really interested in the alcohol problems the state is going through. And I'm putting together a major package for the budget, which I think will win approval at least on the House side, and hopefully through the legislative session. But incidental to that, there is a Center for Alcohol and Addiction Studies at the University of Alaska Anchorage. I think they have one researcher. It's kind of two researchers. Okay, they just got a new one a year or so ago. But it's a good effort. The idea is a good one. I think it's really not funded sufficiently to really be of any advantage to the state in terms of doing the kind of research or doing the kind of things that they're charged with. And so I just putting you on notice that I'm very interested in trying to improve upon their efforts and sufficiently fund them to where they can to make some actual dent in the problem. It's one aspect, and the major effort, of course, is in is in education, prevention, treatment, and evaluation, but the basic research I did does have some aspects to it.
Let me bring this afternoon, we'll talk about it.
I'd like to welcome Representative Meekins to the board.
I knew I was going to get that.
He just dusts off the Senate bills that were put in 2 or 3 or 4 years ago, like, you know, like the nucleus.
As long as you don't mention that I was the one that killed the bill.
Could I respond briefly?
President Barton, go ahead.
Do you have a plan with us since then?
I share your perception of the alcohol addiction unit. And I've asked Chancellor Harrison to have them speak and make a presentation to the Board of Regents at their March 20th meeting here in Juneau. You may be interested in attending. I'll get times to you.
I would like to.
They've done some interesting work. Although they're only 2 permanent employees, they've operated on a soft money grant and contract program so that their efforts are really far broader than just 2 people could produce normally.
Before we get too far from this athletic thing, I would like to bring up a concern of mine. It's relative to the funding that we provided for the Great Alaska Shootout and for the women's tournament. It seems that, W.C. Fields said when he was caught reading the Bible and asked, "What are you doing?" He says, "I'm looking for loopholes." University people in the past, in many instances, have been that type, looking for loopholes.
Reading the Bible.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not accusing them of reading the Bible, but what we have, I think, in the figures relating to the women's tournament, is somewhat of a subversion of legislative intent. Chapter 6, SLA 1979, listed $56,000 for the Great Alaska Shootout and $56,000 for the sponsorship of a women's sports tournament. Now, the intention, I think, was clearly to establish a competition in the state paralleling what I would have expected that they would have included in their budget request of FY 80, or FY 79, funding for that tournament.
I'll get a report to you immediately.
But it's taking money away from the intent. I understand, are scheduling a tournament in Anchorage for March the 14th and 15th. They have 3 teams. The cost estimate for producing that tournament is about $42,000. $42,557. The men's tournament, I think the cost was $19,000 in addition to that, but they brought up twice as many teams. I'm not sure what the sport is here. Is that a basketball tournament?
I believe it is, Senator, and I think the difference in cost probably represents gate receipt differences.
No, gate receipts are estimated to be $2,000 in the women's tournament. Gate receipts in the men's tournament was $79,000. But I think what your $2,000 might reflect is a lack of publicity and promotion. And that brings me to another concern. I wonder if this whole Great Alaska Shootout promotional effort might be better lodged in a nonprofit independent corporation. I think that there are examples nationwide where such tournaments are conducted in that way, and that conforms to the NCAA rules or whatever the governing national athletic organization is.
May I defer a response to that? I'll do a little study and get a response.
My question straight up is, how would you react to placing it into a independent corporation, nonprofit, and directing them? They're specialized, perhaps. The university academic setting doesn't lend itself, you know, to taking on responsibilities of that nature. Representative Meekins.
Mr. Chairman, just to follow up on your comments, I think that's something that is a real possibility we ought to look into. The a couple of different groups have volunteered their services, and for instance, I think the Alaska Visitors Association is, they feel that if they were to be involved with their resources, they could actually, the way they promote certain tours, let's say that the University of Kentucky was going to come up here again. Well, they've got fans that travel with them, and they had about, I don't know, 100 fans that came up here just on their own without any promotion from the state. I think they feel that if they could go into the region in Kentucky and advertise in local magazines or local newspapers or wherever it's appropriate, radio, whatever, however they do that, that they could put a package together with airfare, room and board, the whole thing in one deal, and get the list of the Booster Club members and mail out to them, that kind of thing, and promote right in the region of the team that's coming to get their fans to take advantage of a nice trip to Alaska. They've never been to Alaska, and come up as tourists as well as seeing the basketball. So it might be like a week-long package of, you know, three of those days being the tournament. But I think they feel that we've been remiss in terms of that promotion, and that they've volunteered to, as a nonprofit entity, to try to promote that, to get some kind of discount with Alaska Airlines or Ween or whoever wants to do the flying and all that kind of thing that you do when you really promote and go right into the area. Now, that's just one proposal that I've happened to have heard about. I'm not saying that's what we should do. Maybe it probably isn't what we should do, but at least it shows you what can be done in this area in terms of real promotion, in terms of helping the economy, tourism, and those kinds of things. I think that's the kind of thing that a nonprofit entity could probably take on a more intensive basis than someone who's really working as a coach or whatever, trying to do.
I think if you watch basketball, the national basketball, you'll hear references made to this Great Alaska Shootout. Just last weekend, Kentucky played the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, and the two sportscasters, who's the guy from Milwaukee, I forget his name.
McGuire
and Billy Packer. Yeah. They made mention, and they've done it on previous occasions many times. So it's not just a basketball tournament, it's something that enhances the image of Alaska outside, as well as bringing, I think, significant economic benefits to the community of Anchorage.
Part of our D2 program.
Pardon?
Part of our D2 program.
D2 program, absolutely. You know.
I think there's some other indications that the athletic management isn't listening to the legislature too. And one of those, last year, the Free Conference Committee fully funded the athletic program in Fairbanks and then added $50,000 specifically for a hockey program. I've gotten conflicting stories as to exactly where that money went. But according to the latest story, $20,000 of that was used for department overhead. That's been confirmed twice and denied twice, so I don't know exactly what the correct story is. There seems to be some conflicting stories, too, as to exactly where the gate receipts from hockey went, and it led to the resignation of a hockey coach who couldn't find out what his budget was. Well, I started doing some checking, and apparently some of the other coaches, though they haven't said anything publicly, and some of the other students are rather upset about just where their budgets are going, where athletic scholarship money is going, and so on. And I'd just like to echo both Senator Sumner and Senator Holman's concerns about the management of athletics at all the campuses.
Senator?
President Martin.
I think I understand what I've been hearing at the table. The concern that we express over athletic expenditures is generally in every college in the country far out of proportion to the actual dollar spent. It's a highly visible kind of expenditure. My addition of funding for sports programs for men and women in our list of priorities that we submitted to the board last August was very deliberate. I am truly committed to developing good Alaskan sports, University of Alaska sports. It will lead to a sense of identity. It will help community effort. It's going to help the university in many, many areas, and it's going to help young people too. The management problems that you've mentioned today, I can't promise you I'm going to get under control, but I can promise you I'm going to try to get them under control, and I'll get back on top of them. I understand your concerns, Senator Berger.
Senator Gratula.
Thank you again, Mr. Chairman. I hope we don't just bring in the mistakes of other areas. I hope we can innovate a little bit. in that sports program. The one thing that occurred to me, Mr. Chairman, is that we asked the governor from time to time, and this is sort of a Section 26 set-aside region, for updating new requests into the budget and so on that comes directly from him. I don't know why we couldn't ask the regents or the president to have another look at facility development for sports and ask that maybe they back some facility development for this year in at least the Anchorage, and I'm happy to have the Anchorage and Fairbanks skiing programs, especially outdoor winter sports programs. That really $1 million would just do a tremendous amount for. I mean, it's not a great amount of bricks and mortar, some ski jumps, et cetera.
Mr. Chairman. Representative Meekin.
Yeah, let me beat this horse to death because I know you've already made your statement. Let me give you, I'm preparing on the House side, and I think there's some widespread support for some sports centers. What do we call them?
Complexes?
Well, arenas where you, spectator sport complexes. Up to 10,000 to 12,000 seats in Anchorage, for instance. And my personal opinion is that has an extremely good chance of passing, not on a bond issue, but as an appropriation this year, at least for Anchorage. I know Fairbanks is interested also, and Juneau's indicated some interest in the same kind of thing, and also Kenai.
So Madison Valley has too.
Matt Valley has too. So there seems to me a potentiality that there's going to be several of these centers, at least in Anchorage. Let's just talk about the Anchorage one because that's the one I'm most familiar with. We haven't even, I mean, I think it would be a normal consideration that if we could get work with the university that a 10,000 seat arena like that would be placed on university land with parking development and everything else, with the university being able to utilize it, but also the community be sort of a community and university thing. It would provide interaction. It would get the community onto the campus on a regular basis to watch these events, whether they be concerts or whether they be whatever. And it may or may not be something that the university would want to do, but it seems to me like it would have some advantages in terms of interfacing the university and the community, and it would give the university a tremendous facility for their use. In addition to, in that kind of a thing, you could put 25 racquetball courts and without even increasing the cost. Those kinds of things could be plugged into it that the university students could utilize. And that, so it seems to me that you're really missing out by not having the working relationship in regards to athletics with the university, because we're not even considering working with the university on it because we have so many problems. And I mean, until we can put something in the budget and the chancellors, or in our case, the chancellor doesn't see that as a pool of money, since he got all his priorities, and we put another $50,000 in for hockey, and he suddenly sees that as a pool of money that he can play around with. And you know, we don't see it that way. We see it as that's $50,000 for the hockey program, and when they utilize it to pay overhead or take the money here and manipulate it or send somebody to Hawaii or whatever they do with it, that causes me a problem, and I think it prevents us from getting anywhere. So I just use that as an example. Maybe in your view you wouldn't want to take on this facility, but it seems to me that that's an example of where we're not even having those discussions, because we're having with the municipality of Anchorage. If I have anything to do with it, the appropriation won't go to DOT, it'll go to the municipality, and they'll have the sports center, you know, and instead of the university, it could be the university. And by the way, I want to point out that I personally went to the chancellor and at the beginning of the summer and brought up this subject, as well as several others, in terms of getting their capital improvement plan together to present to the legislature so we could work some of these things through it if they wanted to, and nothing came of that either. So I,
Senator, clearly the long-term future of the Great Alaska Shootout depends on facilities better than Fort Richardson. No question about that.
I realized I didn't get into the loophole in specifics, so just let me take about 15 seconds to do that. Under the women's tournament, you had such personnel costs listed as director of athletics, 2 pay periods, $2,200. The coach for women's basketball, 3 pay periods, $3,600. Sports information director, 3 pay periods, $2,900. You have temporary hourly wages, a certain figure, clerical overtime, leave allowances, staff benefits. Now, all these people, I would presume, were funded in the university's original budget request. This is what I mean by a loophole. You're sucking up money, in this instance, for personal services, $12,500, and that's already funded. Call it double dipping or whatever. There's some charges here, $7,000 for equipment, basketball, tape, game refreshments, awards, and that sort of thing. Publicity, printing, security, another $7,000 for something that just doesn't sound right, smell right.
We'll give you a full report.
But that's the definition of what I mean by loophole.
Yeah, the term you want to use for that is I heard it in another subject the other day called ground truthing. You go out and you tromp around the grounds and you find out the truth of the matter where the money went. I like that phrase and I want to use it a whole lot. You go on ground truth as far as.
I'll check on it.
Mr. Scott, you had some questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Dr. Barton, the budget as it came across from the governor included a tuition increase, about $1.2 million. I think I reviewed that with the committee last month. I understand at this point the regents have deferred action or still to take action on that tuition increase. Can you bring us up to date on that?
At their last meeting, Mr. Scott, the regents deadlocked 5-5 on the issue of raising tuition approximately $35 a term. That means defeat for the motion. There was immediately submitted a request for reconsideration, which will be acted on either at March 20th or, if necessary, at some other meeting, some special meeting prior to that.
I mean, Mr. Chairman, have the regents then taken a position on the governor's budget in terms of the tuition increase? Are they asking for general fund support, or are they asking for the budget to be reduced?
Well, at this stage, they haven't gone beyond the consequences of their negative vote. They haven't gone into the consequences of the negative vote.
Mr. Chairman, one of the other items that I brought to the committee's attention about a month ago was some confusion that appeared to be in the university budget document about salary increase requests, and I think I spoke with Dr. Barton about this earlier also. Can you clarify for us, Dr. Barton, whether you still are planning to ask for a general salary increase for faculty beyond the COLA increases that have been approved recently by the legislature?
The answer is no, sir. The university salary request or salary discussion in its budget highlight document was meant to point out to you, members of the legislature and the public, that we were seeking support for salary increases. The governor's pay bill has more than satisfied that, so there is no further representation from the university on salary increases.
And just follow that up, last year during the special session, there was some discussion in the House passed an additional amount for the university for researchers who had been working on federal grants and contracts, whose grants and contracts were closed out. At that time, the House voted to go ahead and fund raises for them so that it was fair and across the board. Can I ask how you intend those raises to go to those people who are working, say, part on federal funds and part on state funds?
Thanks to the diligent work of our own budget people and the governor's budget people, those funds are in the salary pay bill.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Scott.
Also, again, during the same time period that we made our initial review of the budget during the Senate Finance Committee, there was some public discussion, I think both by you and the governor's office, of the governor's budget proposal for the university. And I heard mentioned several times during that period of time, the budgets seem to be approved by the governor's office on a two-year cycle. And implications were, from the public testimony that I heard, that the governor's office was approving this year's budget on the assumption there'd be no increases in the 82 budget. Is that your understanding? Can you speak to that? What seemed to be a general public testimony?
I have a letter from the chairman of the governor's budget review committee in which he states the committee's support and the governor's support for the budget as submitted. Talks about the request of the university, requests the university to consider a tuition increase to pick up a piece of the cost, and states that, in effect, the generosity of the budget review committee for this year doesn't necessarily commit them to equal generosity the following years. And that's the no more, no other. I take no greater and no lesser significance than that.
If I may, Mr. Chairman, I have one other question. Last year, the university made a lengthy presentation to the committee about its plans for a land management program. In fact, I think Mr. Carter even spoke of the potential for millions of dollars of revenue over the next few years. There's not much mention in this year's document about the land management program. Can you bring the committee up to date on that?
Briefly, Mary Tuttenshutt is in charge of the land management program, reporting to Sherman Carter, our Vice President for Financial Affairs. The basic problems in generating funds in land management rest with the way in which the state manages the lands for the institution, so that our long-term potential really rests upon our ability to distinguish university lands from general state lands and distinguish management of those lands from general state management of those state lands. At this moment, all income from certain classes of university property go into a permanent fund, and we are eventually accruing interest from that permanent fund for operating expenses. This is true, even though this is obviously would be important in the case of the sale of such lands, that for example, the condemnation of land by the city of Anchorage for highway, that money went into the permanent fund and the interest is then available. That's fine. But also, under current policy or current laws, funds from gravel sales and leases also go into the permanent fund. Now, this represents rent, and in effect, we're putting rent into a capital fund and earning interest on the rent, which is modest. So our ability, literally, to manage those lands is very severely hampered right now by certain policies of the State Department of Land Management.
Senator Bennett.
Doctor, will Larry be down here to do any testifying in reference to what his plan might be for the land management?
Larry?
I'm concerned mainly there's about 107,000 acres that the university has, mm-hmm. much of which has timber on it, much of which could be harvested. Mm-hmm. There's other lands where there's peat moss available.
Yeah.
I know numerous people who both need stumpage as well as peat moss.
Mm-hmm.
And every time they've tried to make any sort of an inquiry into it, it's just turned off as if the university or whoever manages it isn't interested in the promulgation.
Could I get some details from you and I'll check?
Sure.
We do have problems because we aren't controlling our destiny on this, and that may be the issue. If not, I'll find out immediately.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Are we going to do the
get to the plan? We've had Mr. Scott pass out two papers. I wonder if you'd like to explain those as there might possibly be reactions to our questions.
I haven't seen them. Sorry.
Copy them.
Perhaps we could start off by your explanation, Mr. Scott, of the two documents, and then that would background us and maybe listen to some questions.
Well, let me speak to the academic plan issue first, since I did see this in advance. I don't find it basically surprising that there is a great deal of similarity between institutional planning done in 5 years ago and institutional planning done now. Had there been a dramatic change in intents and purposes, I think we could be rather alarmed that something was really going off with a bang. My real point to this, however, is that the intents and purposes of the academic plan of 1975 and the mission statement with which it is compared are radically different. The academic plan produced in 75 is what I would call a master plan. It's been embalmed between boards and is filed away on a shelf. It was created outside of the management line of the institution, and I think it was at that time and is now effectively a dead document from the day it was developed. It does not guide the future planning of the institution. I want a planning system that means that managers plan, and I need to give them some tools with which to plan. The mission statement is the first simple tool in that category, and the fact that it shows some similarities to intents and objectives of the 1975 plan, I think means that basically our faculty members and our chancellors and our regents haven't radically rethought the missions of the various institutions of the system.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The purpose of my memo was to raise the very question I think Mr. Burton's alluding to. When you say that the 75 plan was done outside the management of the university, I'm not clear on that at all. I thought it was directed by the Board of Regents and involved all the faculty and staff of the university.
I'm sorry, Dave, we're not communicating. There's a difference between having the board or the president charge the development of a master plan. What I mean is the difference in planning concepts between what I would identify as a blue ribbon concept of planning, blue ribbon committee concept of planning, and an integrated planning system. And that's the distinction I'm trying to make. What I meant, clearly it wasn't outside the system, but the blue ribbon committee It sits out here and it takes a look at the institution and makes a judgment and then imposes that judgment on people that have to make it work. What I need is a system that involves faculty and department chairpersons and staff and deans and directors and chancellors who have to operate the plan. I have to have them involved in actually making that. It's a strategic planning system. It's a totally different concept than the blue ribbon approach. Now it works. I was 50% of the team that was responsible for making it work at West Virginia University. We created it and put it in place, and it's been working for a decade. And it does lead to good planning. It does lead people to plan daily, and each year the budget does drop out. It's one of the few things in planning that actually do work. I think it's first rate, Dave. And I'm not challenging what you're saying in similarity. What I'm saying is that what we need are a few tools, and then we need to make that system work. And that's what we need the dollars for. That's where we're headed for this coming year. You'll like the budget plans that drop out next summer. There'll be a much bigger improvement over what we have today.
I guess the specific question I had, Mr. Chairman, for the committee's attention was, you alluded to this is step one or phase one, our number one tool. And there's a $175,000 request in the budget for fiscal 81, and I gather for step two, or phase two, or step three. And it's not clear as to what those phases or steps are that you're speaking to in the budget. And I think the relationship I was trying to establish is, what is it that you're going to do that will provide something for the use of the legislature in the budget process that we don't already have through either the academic plan of 75 or some other tool that we've been waiting 4 years for the reasons to step forward.
What you'll see develop, what you'll see in next year's budget, because it will be the first one developed in the developing plan like this, you'll see the product of facilitators on each of the campuses designed to develop the process of planning. It's a training exercise. To do that, we need some travel funds, we need some publication funds, we need a good deal of support money in order to get that thing operating for the entire university system. We need some funds to develop the three basic tools, the organizational goals and concepts, goals and objective statement, the planning assumptions, our agreed upon statement about the future, and we need a good deal of work in our where we've been in the past, our fact book that we want to put out every 2 years. The thing that you will see for this will be the development of those tools and a mechanism for keeping them up to date and a mechanism for having them used by managers in the system. That's essentially what we have. I'd be delighted to invite any of you to attend the next session we have on this that Dean Phillips will be heading. It's a good and useful, rather exciting kind of system.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Cotillo.
Speaking of plans, the university stole for two or three generations the Hatch-Morrill Act funds from the renewable resource area. Agriculture, forestry, upland renewable resources were terribly abused. Fairbanks campus and its administration couldn't be worse bum rap. They had a chance in the Tanana Valley to do tremendous things. They had a chance to do a great deal for Delta, and they had a chance to do a tremendous amount for Matt Niska, Kenai, and so on. That seed money was used for engineering and other projects at the time because there just wasn't sufficient territorial and early stated support. It's time to stop that foolishness, and it's time that we repaid to the Upland Renewable Resource Program. If the state's mission is to take non-renewable resource money and build renewable resource money, it must have the academic, the engineering, the whole talent there to do it. And I see, just sort of here, that you're taking a new look at renewable resource development in the university's mission. I'd like to hear just a minute or two to see if that my analysis or my words in the hall.
Precisely. In agriculture, we have passed the days of surplus for all practical purposes, although the American Federation of Farmers that are now camping again in Washington are concerned a little about the wheat surplus they make, grain surplus they may be facing this year with the Russian sale cutback. But that's temporary. The world no longer produces the same amount of food per capita as it did last year, or the year before, or 5 years ago. It started to decline in maize, in grain, in meat, in fish, in almost everything that we do. And in that kind of an economy, the state of Alaska can make a real dent in agricultural production. The essence is economic as much as it is scientific. The problem is economic as much as it is scientific. And I think that the future for agriculture in Alaska is really fantastic. This is precisely what a land-grant university was founded for. And I think we'll do a first-rate job in helping that. Jim Drew, who runs that end of the place, really understands Alaska, and he really understands agriculture. And I have some real hope for that. He's also concerned about developing in forestry.
Are the regions helping? Are they finally getting out of their dead behind doing something? They've been opposed to anything.
Yes, sir. No,
they've been no good.
I think one of the most satisfying. This is a frank committee. One of the most satisfying days that I had with the regions was having just been on board for about 2 months to have them endorse this set of priorities that stresses as our second basic program priority the support for renewable resource development in the state of Alaska.
Thank you very much.
I think what we'll do now, I see that your schedule, the chairman is scheduled 8:30 tomorrow morning, is that right? Mm-hmm. For a continuation of the university's presentation.
Perhaps Chancellor will work at that time, Senator?
Perhaps we'll see. There might be some detailed questions that the committee answers. But
thank
I
you.
Suggest you have your personnel here, all of them ready to present. So we'll stand in adjournment up there.